And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy here.
And welcome to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you here on a Friday, OBL Fan Mailbag Friday, as we'll be taking your questions, and we're pretty sure you're going to have a few in light of the latest developments concerning Buffalo's roster and the COVID reserve list. Steve, certainly not what you want to hear entering what we would consider the most important game of the year as far as the division title is concerned. We talked about it even before the season started. I said it many times, my greatest fear was COVID was going to claim the availability of important players for an important game. Here we are. Gabe Davis, Cody Ford, the latest players to go on COVID reserve, in addition to special teams coordinator Heath Farwell, as well as defensive line coach Eric Washington.
Yeah, that's a crusher, I think. I think it's a real crusher. And Emmanuel Sanders is going to be back in the lineup, so the wide receiver corps shouldn't miss a beat if those guys are all 100%. Cody Ford, that hurts. I mean, he would not be a normal starter in the perfect world, but they got to have him now. I mean, he's as good a guy as they've got, and his you know, playing right guard, he's got to, you know, their offensive lines have been a mess, and losing more guys is going to make it even worse. I really get the feeling that, you know, the only way the Bills are what it's going to look like if the Bills can win this game is if Josh Allen puts the cape on. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I gotcha. I was thinking that might have to be the case even before the losses of Gabe Davis and Cody Ford. Now, I know people on social media are blowing a gasket. How is this going to look? It looks like Emmanuel Sanders will return to the lineup and be available, so that is a plus. So no Davis, no Beasley, the most logical replacements. Sanders replaces Davis outside. McKenzie replaces Beasley in the slot. Jake Kumerow is your four, and Marquez Stevenson is your five. The offensive line is another discussion. I know people got all bent out of shape when they saw that Bobby Hart got brought off the COVID practice squad reserve list. And Coach McDermott was asked about him specifically. He said, yeah, like to see him. Haven't seen him yet. We'll see him at practice. You know, may potentially need him. Because you don't know which way this thing's going to turn between now and Sunday. But in all likelihood, provided they can go into the game with the linemen they have left, they won't need to put him on the field. Because you're going to probably have to go into the game next week, right, much the same way you did last week. Spencer Brown, unless Deion Dawkins can get out of the protocol, and even then I think he's a toss-up as to whether he'll play, having gotten no practice this week. He would, you know, Spencer Brown back at left tackle this week, Darrell Williams at right tackle, and then your left guard and your center are the same, Butker and Morse, and then your right guard is probably Ryan Bates.
Yeah. Yeah, he's probably the next guy up. And God forbid if somebody goes down, because then you may as well just, you know, it's like tossing a deck of cards in the air and just seeing which ones you pick up first, you know.
Well, your decision is basically who is our third tackle. In all likelihood, it's Tommy Doyle, the rookie fifth-round draft choice.
Right.
So he is your third tackle, your swing tackle, if you will. And then backup guard, maybe the practice squad call-up from last week, Alex Capra. So that's essentially where you are at this point in time. So, yeah, I mean, are the options great? No, but that's who you have to play with, and you got to go make it happen. Here's my question to you, Steve. How much do you believe Brian Daboll can put in some kinds of plays that we haven't seen on tape yet by virtue of the players that are now being inserted into the lineup? Certainly McKenzie's skill set is different from that of Cole Beasley. So you can use him to stretch the defense horizontally. We've seen that already from his skill set, but in the slot, I just wonder, he's a jitterbug guy. Beasley's more of a find the space, knows the leverage kind of player. I just wonder if there's a different way in which McKenzie can be utilized as opposed to Beasley.
Yeah, I mean, McKenzie's got speed that Beasley does not have. And you could start using, although it wouldn't be quite as effective, you could start using Isaiah McKenzie a little bit like the Chiefs use Tyreek Hill. You send him through and you just force, you take the lid off and create space underneath him so that Diggs and Sanders can work and Dawson Knox can work the middle of the field after the, you know, there's space in the intermediate field to use. I think if you use McKenzie to that end, you run him through the middle of the defense and they've got to cover him and keep a lid on him. So those safeties will have to back up. And I imagine they'll go to two safeties. If they go to one safety, you got a chance of snapping him loose in the back end, but you got to have the right play call at the right time and pick. And if the Patriots disguise it, and they do it without you knowing it, you can't take advantage of it. So a little of that's on Josh, but I think that's what you could do if I'm Brian Daboll and you've got McKenzie who needs to, and by, you know, because of you're backed into a corner, McKenzie's got to get on the field and get a bunch of snaps. I think that may be one role you could use from McKenzie, is just to use him a little bit like Tyreek Hill is used in Kansas City.
I like that idea. And I misspoke. It's Jacob Caprot, the practice squad offensive lineman that got called up last week after Feliciano went on the COVID reserve list Sunday. So to recap, Bills players on the 53-man roster who are still in COVID reserve protocol: Deion Dawkins, John Feliciano, Cody Ford, Cole Beasley, Gabe Davis, and A.J. Epenesa. So the thing that has been reported is Beasley and Davis, both unvaccinated players, that according to ESPN's Adam Schefter, which would mean they will definitely miss this game. Beasley in the 10-day window, when did he go on? 2 days ago? So he went on Wednesday.
He might have gone on Tuesday.
Conceivably, Tuesday. So conceivably, he will be out of the protocols before the Bills' next game against the Falcons. Gabriel Davis will not. He is going to miss two games this week and next week if the reports about him being unvaccinated by ESPN's Adam Schefter are accurate, and there's no reason to think they're not. So that is not good. I think what we should anticipate, Steve, you tell me, how much help do you think they may need to fill out special teams and other areas, knowing that people are moving up the depth chart with the absences here? Jay Kumerow can still play on special teams and be the team's fourth wideout on Sunday. That's not an issue. But very often they dress six receivers. The last couple of weeks, they dressed seven. Right. So does that raise the possibility? I would think it does, of somebody like Tanner Gentry or even Isaiah Hodgins to get called up for special teams duties.
Well,
it's possible,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, it is. I think more likely it's probably going to come from the side of the ball with, you know, guys like Tyrell Dodson, Klein, Saran Neal, not Dane Jackson so much because he'd be starting now, but Jaquan Johnson. Some of the defensive backs, linebackers, will probably have to take a bigger load and play a more important role, as well as Sweeney, you know, all those guys as well. Sweeney on the offensive side of the ball, and of course, the other tight end, or the fullback, which would be Reggie Gilliam. You know, you'll get all you really need. You really need, like, gosh, six to eight, well, more than that. You need eight guys, seven to nine guys that are hardcore guys on special teams that play punt return, kickoff return. Kickoff, you can kind of get away with if Tyler Bass can just boot it out of the end zone. You take touchbacks all day. So you don't have to worry about that. Punt and punt return team is the crux of your special teams that you've got to get right. And you need guys that can protect, obviously, and also that can run. And there's a lot of technique in that. So I would anticipate that the Bills, with Heath Farwell, now Heath Farwell is also one of the guys, of course, but that is on the list. But they've probably been giving reps to different guys throughout the year to make sure they know what guys can do and what they cannot do. So they should have guys in there. The problem is when they put those guys in there, if the Patriots decide to take advantage of a guy who hasn't been in there, and they'll know, they may do it. You know, they may throw a punt block scheme that forces a new guy to make a really tough and quick decision that he hasn't practiced. That's how you get blocks.
So we look at this matchup now, and it has dramatically changed. And the thing where I think the Bills are going to be hurt the most is I think Belichick and the defensive staff can now confidently put all their attention on Stephon Diggs and basically say, we're going to shut him down. Who else you got? And now it falls on the shoulders of Dawson Knox, Emmanuel Sanders, presumably, assuming he's up, and Isaiah McKenzie and the backs to help Josh Allen make some plays in the passing game. And we already know, Steve, that chunk plays were going to have to be a part of the formula for success here. To ask the Bills, with the lack of consistency of their play on offense, to consistently string 10 and 12 play scoring drives together against that caliber of a defense, it's just not sustainable. So they need chunk plays to have a 5-play scoring drive or a 3-play scoring drive, something like that, or at least a short field if special teams does something for you. If they're taking Diggs out of the equation, I'm not saying they can't make big plays, but it's a heck of a lot harder to do so.
That's right. Now, certainly Diggs and Josh can still make big plays, even if Diggs is the focus, as we saw last year in the Monday night game. Even in the 30-mile-an-hour, 40-mile-an-hour wind game here earlier in the season, Diggs got loose behind the defense, and Josh, you know, Josh threw that into a 40-mile-an-hour wind or with a 40-mile-an-hour wind, and it still hit Diggs in the forearm, and he might have caught it for a touchdown. So they can still make plays. That's why Diggs is who he is, and that's why Josh is who he is. They can overcome that. But others, then the finger quotes you raise up, the other guys, Dawson Knox and Emmanuel Sanders, they got to be difference makers. They've got to be on it. You can't have a night from Dawson Knox of 8 targets and 3 catches. You know what I mean? You need eight, if you're going to get 8 targets, you need 6 catches. You've got to be efficient every place else. If Emmanuel Sanders gets 10 targets, he's got to have 7 to 8 catches. The others have to really make the Patriots pay, and that's hard. Plus, you know, Singletary and Breida and Moss, whoever they do go with in this, Tywan Jones will still be there, but he'll be playing special teams. He's been limited this week in practice with a knee. You know, they've got to get contributions from other players when the Patriots force you to do that, and that's, yes, that's sometimes hard to do.
I'm wondering, this is for me, and I know you and I talked about this several times leading up to the season. Greatest fear was COVID wrecking the team's season. We heard Coach McDermott and Brandon Bean admit when they were asked, is your team's low vaccination rate a competitive disadvantage? They said it was. They agreed. It's a competitive disadvantage if your vaccination rate is lower than other teams. We know there are teams that are fully vaccinated. I am not sure if the Patriots are one of them, but they certainly have a higher vaccination rate than Buffalo. And this essentially is the chickens coming home to roost at the worst possible time, where you are down 2 of your top 3 receivers. You're down 3 linemen, arguably three of your top 7 offensive linemen. And you're down a pass rusher who's a regular part of the rotation. For me,
that's a deep hole.
And for fans, it has to be supremely frustrating because, look, and I know if you get vaccinated, it's not a guarantee that you're not going to wind up on the COVID reserve list. Look at where Deion Dawkins is. He's caught it twice now. And this time we knew he was fully vaccinated and he's still there. So, look, I'm not trying to make this a debate. I'm just saying it's unfortunate. And it's terribly frustrating when you could see this from a mile away. And now it's happened. I'm reminded of Emmanuel Sanders, who was hesitant to get the vaccine. And then the league's protocols were put in place in an effort to try to spur more players to get vaccinated, to help protect the player population in the league. And right before training camp opened, Emmanuel Sanders got his first shot, I think the day before camp opened, and he put it on Instagram and said, not going to deal with player availability and all of that. Got a Super Bowl to win this year. Got to eliminate the ways in which I can be taken off the field. And he got fully vaccinated. And knock on wood, he hasn't landed on the COVID reserve list. Now, it's not foolproof, but I think it does put you in a better position to not fall victim to the virus. And I don't know. It's just tough because with what the expectations were all season long, the thing that's going to bring you down potentially is COVID more than anything else.
Yeah, it's got to be frustrating. But like you said, you could see it coming from a mile away. The problem is this, even with vaccination rates the way they are, and even if these guys are vaccinated, we're getting some players they're getting it that are vaccinated. The difference is that they have a chance to come back a little faster, and you miss one game instead of two. That's frustrating. You think, too, and not for nothing, I mean, everybody makes their own choices. How frustrated does Gabe Davis have to be right now at the point when he was just getting to the point where he was going to be a bigger factor and work his way and earn his way back onto the field? This happens to him before the most important game of the season. And it really does cripple this wave of positives does cripple the Bills further in areas where they couldn't afford to be crippled, particularly the offensive line with Cody Ford and, you know, the wide receiver core. I don't know how close to 100% Emmanuel Sanders is going to be, but he was limited all week in practice and he was full yesterday.
Well, yeah, full yesterday is an encouraging sign.
Yes. And Gabe Davis, against a team like the Patriots, where you know you got to hit him, you got to nick him for big plays. It's got to be frustrating for him personally as well. But once they get it, and I'm not even going to get into the, like you said, I don't want to get into the debate about who would have or could have gotten it or didn't get it because they're vaccinated or all of that. The fact of the matter is, you got a better chance of getting healthy faster or getting testing out faster if you're vaccinated, and that's the frustrating part.
Right. So the Bills will have to go into this game supremely shorthanded. And bottom line is this. Nobody's going to feel sorry for you. Just ask the Browns if anybody felt sorry for them being down 22 players, including 10 starters last week. And they almost won the football game. I think we all knew that this was going to be a monumental test going in. The mountain is a little bit steeper to climb now. Not saying it's insurmountable, but it's considerably more difficult. And we'll have to see the kind of effort and the kind of game plan that these players and this coaching staff can muster for Sunday's game. We should mention that with special teams coordinator Heath Farwell on the COVID reserve list, assistant special teams coach Matt Smiley will be running special teams on Sunday. And then with Eric Washington, the defensive line coach, on the COVID reserve list, we would anticipate Jacques Césaire, the assistant defensive line coach, to be running the defensive line at Sunday's game in Foxborough. We want to remind you, even though it is Christmas Eve and you guys are all thinking about family time, if you have time to spend with us and you have a question either about Sunday's game, the league at large, player availability, what line combinations we could be looking at with the players expected to miss this game, you can give us a call at 803-0550, 1-888-550 2550. You can also hit us up on the tweet sheet at One Bills Live. And the reaction, Steve, to the COVID reserve designations today were some of the most panicked that I have seen thus far this season, because I think the domino effect going from Beasley to Davis was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back for the fan base. They came out of the woodwork on social media, you know, throwing their hands up. Oh my gosh. No. Say that's unbelievable. What are we going to do? Oh my God. You know, all of that.
Yeah.
And the thing that I don't like is once you see a guy from one position group go down, you're almost waiting for another guy from the same position group to go down. And we saw that on the offensive line, Dawkins followed by Feliciano and now followed by Ford. And we're seeing in the wide receiver group too, you know? And so you just hope this is the end of it and that it doesn't stretch into next week. I don't think it's any secret. The Bills need these games if they're going to go anywhere in the postseason. You need this one chiefly this weekend, and you're going to have to do it without all your horses, plain and simple.
Right. That's – yeah. It's – because we've all seen it so many times. I mean, you got to go in. You got to hit on all cylinders. You can't make mistakes. And you got to have your best players playing great to beat the Patriots. And now you almost get the feeling none of that's possible with the Buffalo Bills. I mean, if it's almost the point where people are thinking – you know, Bills fans on social media thinking if Bill Belichick doesn't win this game against the Buffalo Bills, it's the most embarrassing loss of his tenure as head coach of the Patriots. So yeah. that's how down the Bills fans are. But like you and I said, I mean, it's still you've still got your best player in Josh Allen. You've still got some weapons offensively. Don't know how much they can protect Josh and how consistently they can play offensively, particularly up front. But you know, they're still going to go out, and the Bills are still going to feel like they have a chance. Sean McDermott spoke a little bit today, obviously, when this word came out. We've got some sound from him that we can play. But he's, you know, rightfully so, I think they're really matter of fact about all this. Listen, it's the next guy up. We got to keep going. The league is not going to stop. And I don't know what your thoughts are about this, Brownie, but the league is absolutely, positively, 1,000% going to push through this. And they do not care which team or who is affected by it. We haven't gotten to that point at all yet. And as long as these teams, as long as the positive tests are going to come in a handful at a time, and even up to like we saw with the Cleveland Browns, where you get 22 guys on the list, you better line up and play. And that's just the stark right. reality of it.
The last resort by the league, based on last year and this year's evidence, is they move the game. That's the last resort. Canceling the game does not seem to even be entertained, even though the Players Association was pushing for that last week. So that's kind of where it's at. But, yeah, let's turn to head coach Sean McDermott. He addressed the media earlier today. Here is his take on losing Gabriel Davis as one of the most recent COVID reserve designations.
He's been hot, and so yeah, he's, you know, we lose a guy that's on a roll, and he's practiced, you know, most of the week, including yesterday, until we found out, and you know, I think, but we have valuable players and guys we depend on and trust that are, you know, in the wings that can step in and are expected to step up.
Yeah, I mean, that's where it's at. All you can do is turn to the next guy on the depth chart.
Yeah.
Four touchdowns in the last three games, though, that is going to be sorely missed.
Yeah, and the simple fact of the matter is, and this is always a thought, too, people wonder how this goes down in the locker room when these guys get sick. I don't think this is something that, you know, guys that are actually going to play in the game or guys that aren't vaxxed or whatever, it is more like an injury situation than it is a bad decision situation. I don't think – because I just don't think this is a divisive issue in the locker room. But I think I don't think there's any question that if this season is derailed here in the last three games and they go 0-3, miss the playoffs, and it's a tragedy I don't think it goes down. Yeah, I don't think this goes down to anything, but, you know, the players aren't going to blame COVID for if this season goes down the tubes, or blame each other for the COVID making the season go down the tube, I guess I should more accurately say. I don't think this is going to be a divisive issue in the locker room because they've got a lot of faith in the guys in the locker room that are left over. They just got to play well. And this is but I'll tell you this: this is a hole that they're standing in with the COVID that got hit here this late in the week in this game. And we were saying yesterday how important, how huge this game is, and anything that puts a crack in the paint job of what you want this game to look like is pretty concerning. And you know, so I think this is Yeah, I think I'm trying to put myself in the mindset of the players, and I think it, you know, there's some ways you can spin it as a player to say, hey, this may help us because now we can just play loose and free. We've got all the nobody thinks we can win it.
Yeah.
So that's always a good place to be in. It helps you play a little freer, a little bit more mistake-free, a little bit more aggressive. Maybe that'll help. But that's one way to players use it.
Yeah, you got nothing to lose. You're in a situation where you're down several players, starting caliber players, and you still got to make it happen. I mean, ask the Saints how they're doing with their fourth quarterback. You know, you got to line up with Ian Book, you know, who was – what was he, playing for Notre Dame last year? I mean, they got Taysom Hill and Trevor Siemian on COVID reserve. I mean, it's crazy.
Right.
And the Bills aren't the only team. I just wonder where the coaching staff fits in all of this because you know that, and I don't have to tell you this, Steve, but in football, the team concept is preached maybe more than in any other sport. Sacrifice for the team, all of that stuff. And unfortunately, the decisions around vaccinations has flown in the face of that. And I'm not saying that, you know, people are right or wrong for doing whatever they decide to do. But I don't think you can debate that the self-sacrifice that NFL players and coaches talk about all the time with respect to the team concept and the one goal has not, I mean, it's been interrupted and compromised by this vaccination situation.
Yeah, it's interesting, too. The personnel out for the Bills on Sunday, Beasley, Gabe Davis, Deion Dawkins, Cody Ford, John Feliciano, A.J. Epinesa, Heath Farwell, Eric Washington. So there's two coaches. I couldn't tell you which one of those guys are unvaccinated. I know Gabe Davis is. Most of those guys, Deion Dawkins, some of these guys are vaccinated. So it's hard to point the finger at those guys for getting it when everybody under the sun's getting it. The difference is, you know, how fast can they come back? Even the coaching staff, who's I believe is, I would say, I don't know, I can't even say how many of them are, I think they're probably all vaccinated. I'm just guessing. But they got guys that are going down with it. The thing that's incongruous with me is, and I've seen it happen, and I don't know what the environment is in the locker room these days, but I know this, the thing that makes guys shake their head and roll their eyes is you've got a guy who's got an ankle injury. He'll get a shot of cortisone to take the pain away and go out and play on an injured ankle. No problem. And it's hard for most guys to make the connection of what's the difference between getting a shot in your arm to make sure you stay healthy as to getting one for a bad ankle, you know, with long-term effects down the road, which you talk to old guys like me, they'll tell you they are. They're real. It's hard to get your mind around the difference that players place on those different scenarios, one taking a shot on game day to play and the other taking a shot in the preseason to make sure you stay healthy.
Right.
It's hard to get your mind around that. But it's hard to sit here and also, just like I said, a lot of the guys that are off the Bills are vaccinated guys. They're going to have a chance to come back. Dawkins is a great example of it. I mean, they've done everything they could, and still the virus got them. So hard to single out guys who aren't vaccinated as being different than anybody else. Now, coming back, it takes a little longer, a couple of days. But, man, oh, man. It's hard to make this into a divisive issue in the locker room, in my opinion.
Yeah. There was a football game last night, Titans and 49ers. Steve was getting so exasperated with Jimmy Garoppolo, he had to text me about it. As Garoppolo gave a couple of gifts to the Titans, and the Titans rally from 10 down to beat the 49ers 20-17. Steve, they now have 6 wins against the current playoff field, most in the NFL. And if the Colts lose to the Cardinals this week, they will clinch the AFC South.
I can't tell you how much the Tennessee Titans are looking like the Patriots. They make no mistakes. Yeah. They just kind of continue to grind in situation. They were 10 points down. They just continued to grind it out. One on some specific down and distance plays, got the ball back, scored, and then they did get a couple of enormous gifts from Jimmy Garoppolo that gave him a chance to get back in it and keep the 49ers in the first half from going out 17-0, from which they would never have recovered. So that there's all that. But the 49ers, what are they doing?
They're a mystery team.
What are they doing? I mean, Jimmy, you can't tell. I mean, maybe you can. You can tell me. I don't know if I believe it. You can't tell me Trey Lance couldn't play better than Jimmy Garoppolo did last night. Because that guy he was garbage last night. I was so shocked. He couldn't even get to game manager mode in that offense. What is he doing?
Yeah. He's just been terribly inconsistent. It's why on the playoff run to their Super Bowl appearance a couple of years ago, he was throwing the ball 10 times a game.
You can't win.
They'd rather
like that.
Just run the thing than rely on him.
You can't win in the playoffs.
They got to the Super Bowl that way, though, which was shocking. But their defense and their run game was that good. And they were able to get there. And then, you know, they lost to they lose to the Ravens. I can't even remember now. 2 years ago, who won the Super Bowl?
They lost it to the Niners.
It was pre-COVID.
Didn't they play? Didn't they play the Patriots or was it the Chiefs?
Chiefs.
Yeah,
that's what it was. They lost to the Chiefs. All right. Well, I just don't see them getting back there. I mean, that NFC field seems to be more of the haves and the have-nots. And I know we got to get to break here, but Dallas, by virtue of the Niners' loss last night, clinched a playoff berth. So they are in. They are the second team to clinch a playoff berth next to Green Bay, who clinched last week. Those are the only two teams that have clinched playoff berths, and we're going into week 16. It's amazing. All right, we got to take a break here. But when we come back, we'll get some of your thoughts on the tweet sheet. Second hour of the show, Greg Cosell's coming up from NFL Films to discuss the X's and O's of this matchup between the Bills and the Patriots. More coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live here on a Friday. Happy Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas to everybody. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you as we sit 2 days away now from Buffalo's biggest game of the season against the Patriots in Foxborough, 1 p.m. kick on Sunday. And we do want to go to the OBL fan mailbag here on Friday to take any and all questions. You can also do that at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. And on the Fan Friday mailbag, which is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving company of the Buffalo Bills, Dale asks, "Hi, guys, I have two questions. Are there any receivers they can take off the practice squad? What about the running back Antonio Williams?" Yes, they can take receivers off the practice squad. They have Tanner Gentry and Isaiah Hodgins. But as we mentioned earlier, Steve, they still have five healthy receivers to go into the game. And Kumerow would presumably be the four, provided Sanders is playing, and all indications would seem to point in that direction. And then Marquez Stevenson would be the five and probably handle the return duties. So
right.
They should be good there.
Yeah, the wide receiver room is less of a concern than the offensive line room. And as for Antonio Williams, yes, they could activate him as well. And maybe if that might be a thing they do because of his ability to play special teams and cover kicks. I don't know what his level is, but yeah. So all that stuff is available, but I don't think wide receiver is a place they're overly concerned about because Gabe Davis, up until the last 2 weeks, was a fourth guy anyway. I think the Cole Beasley absence is probably as big a bigger deal than the Gabe, as crazy as it sounds, is bigger the deal than the Gabe Davis absence.
Yeah.
But they both stink.
Yeah. But no question about it. Thomas asks, "Now what? Is Josh hermetically sealed in a mayonnaise jar on the porch of Funk and Wagnalls? Seriously, what precautions are taken to prevent the spread from getting out of hand? Never a good time to get COVID, but this couldn't be worse timing." I agree, it couldn't be worse timing. Coach McDermott, in addressing the media this morning, said they've been virtual all week in light of the COVID cases that popped up last week. So the only time the players have come into the facility is to actually practice, and he has made sure, despite the weather, that they practice outside to further mitigate the spread. And it's probably a good thing that they did that.
Yeah.
Knowing Gabe Davis was at practice Thursday and pops up positive Friday morning.
Yeah. I mean, that you, they're doing everything they can do. Now, it's also, and you know this as well, McDermott and his coaching staff and his leaders on his team are all telling their other guys, hey, listen, when you go home, don't go down to the public gym and go maskless and with all these wahoos that are in, you know, you got to stay isolated at home too, right? Don't go to all these petri dishes of establishments and go out there. With
don't go out to dinner.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are trying to stay sequestered for the next 2 months, like completely away from everybody. That's hard to do. Obviously it's hard to do. None of us could really do it as well as we'd like, but that's what we're looking at.
Yeah. It's not easy. Not easy. Especially with this Omicron running rampant. Let's go to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. We got Nick in Los Angeles leading us off today. What do you have for us, Nick? You're on One Bills Live.
Yeah, I've got a comment and two questions.
Sure.
Antonio Williams, a couple weeks ago, Steve said that he probably wasn't good enough to play on the team. That's why he was on the taxi squad. And my comment or question is, if he's on the taxi squad, either he's good enough to play with fresh legs, or you put someone else on the taxi squad in his spot. But the real question I've got is, on 4th and 2, why don't they line up to go for it unless it's going to take a field goal past 45 yards? You line up to go for it. If you don't like what you see, you take the delay of game penalty and either kick the field goal or punt. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate the call. I think when Steve addressed the Antonio Williams situation, people were like, well, why can't they call that guy up? And I think all Steve said, and if I don't get this right, Steve, just let me know. Steve was basically saying if he was good enough to be on the active roster right now and better than the guys they already have on the active roster, he would be there.
Right.
And he's not.
Right.
Basically saying he's on the practice squad for a reason. Right? Isn't that kind
of
how
exactly?
You
of course. I mean, it goes without saying. They think Moss and Singletary are better options than Antonio Williams is. That doesn't mean they don't like Antonio Williams, but they like Moss and Singletary better. That's the point of that conversation. I'm positive, and the strategy of lining the Bills do exactly. The Bills do exactly what Nick in L.A. said they should do on 4th and short or in the field goal range. They'll come up and try and get guys to jump off sides, or they'll go for it or not go for it, and they'll kick the field goal. I don't know why he thinks they would not do that. I mean, it's not a situation that happens a ton, but we've seen them try and get the other team to jump off sides a ton and then take a timeout, either punt it or kick the field goal. I mean, that's a common occurrence. I don't know why Nick thinks that is something that they don't do.
Yeah, I don't know where that was coming from, to be quite honest. Let's go back to the phones, though. We'll go to John in South Buffalo. John, what do you have for us? You're on One Bills Live.
Yeah, I'm sorry, fellas, but I disagree with you. I think these players should be called out for not being vaccinated. And I think Steve was wrong when he said there's no difference between the unvaccinated. They're both getting it. Well, the fact of the matter is that the vast majority of the people who get vaccinated do not contract the disease. And with 80% or more of the Phillies players being vaccinated, can you imagine if they weren't vaccinated? You wouldn't be able to field a team.
It's actually, I think it's about 90% vaccinated now.
Yeah.
Yeah, it inched its way up through the course of the season. Just
yeah,
so
and I don't know why.
Knows, but
I don't know what do you mean by calling them out. John, I don't.
Yeah, because I think they should be criticized.
Okay.
Because I think that this whole idea of team before itself rings hollow when these guys don't get the shot. And I think the press was right the other day when they were peppering Josh Allen with the questions about what he felt about that situation. Because the team is always saying, oh, the team comes first. Well, in this case, it doesn't. And the team is going to suffer.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, you're right, John.
The team is going to suffer.
It's hard. You're 100% right on that point of it. I will not debate that for a second. It's very hard for a player to look a teammate in the eye and say he is all for the team and the team comes first when he makes, granted, a personal decision, but a decision nonetheless that hurts the team effort. You heard the head coach and the general manager of this football team admit when they were asked back in September, with a lower vaccination rate for your players in terms of the entire team's percentage of vaccinated players, are you at a competitive disadvantage? And because of the way the rules are structured and because of the contraction rate of unvaccinated people in comparison to vaccinated people, they answered yes, because that's what the science says. And that's what the scope of the rules is going to point to, that you are going to be at a competitive disadvantage. And now the Bills, in their most important game of the season, are at a competitive disadvantage. Appreciate the call, John.
Yeah, and I get it, John. I mean,
just,
you can call
just
these,
a fact.
You can call these guys out all you want, but what do you think it's going to do? What's the point? Are you going to, I mean,
what?
You going to hold them out of the game even more? Or are
no,
you going to
I think
find
John's
them?
Just, I
mean,
what I think, you, no, I think, and John's gone, just so you know, Steve, but I think John's issue is the personal decision, which everybody has the right to do, flies in the face of everything they've represented as a professional football player. That's the issue here
for
him, for John.
I get it. I mean, you've heard the conversations both in the media.
Yeah, it's not going to change.
You're not going to change their mind because logic and reason and data and science and all that other stuff don't come into play for some of them. Not all of them, but some of them. And so you're not going to change their mind. And for whatever reason, they will not change their mind. That is the most infuriating thing. You got to kind of live with, because you can't make them do it.
Break time for us here. When we come back, we'll get more of your thoughts from the fan mailbag. See what questions you have for us there. And coming up in the second hour of the show, from NFL Films, the senior producer, Greg Cosell, will join us. Talk some X's and O's on Bills Patriots coming up on Sunday. It's One Bills Live. Stay tuned. Hey, Bills Mafia, you could win a trip to the Super Bowl on us. Just download the official mobile app of the Buffalo Bills, create a profile, and fill out the entry form. Already have a profile? Just fill out the form in your app. One lucky fan will win two tickets to the Super Bowl in L.A., including flights and hotel. Don't miss out on this once-in-a-lifetime experience. That is a pretty good deal. Take advantage of that. Get on the Bills app now. We wanted to get some more of your questions off of the fan mailbag question list. And we are up to Jonathan, who asks, what are your thoughts about getting Zach Moss into the screen game more? If you look at the Chiefs and Miami games, he killed it on screens. 3 receptions for 55 yards and 6 receptions for 39 yards. Just saying. What do you think about that, Steve?
I get it. I mean, we've talked about this. There was a time when we didn't think the Bills had a screen pass in their playbook. And then you have Devin Singletary drop a screen pass in the Chiefs game that might have made a difference, you know. And then,
yeah.
One problem is, I think, a screen pass is not about who catches the ball. It's about who's up front. Your offensive line has to do a nice job. That's the problem with screen passes. I think that's one of the reasons the Bills, along with you got a quarterback that's a running quarterback, all that plays a factor into why screen passes are or are not a big part of your offense. I don't think it has as much to do with somebody who, like Zach Moss or Devin Singletary or whatever. Zach Moss has played, has had some nice screen passes, but now he's having trouble even getting active on game day. And I'm pretty sure it's not because he runs screen passes really well. So I don't know. If he's in, yeah, maybe they'll run it. Maybe they'll give him a chance to do that. Maybe that's part of his strength of his game. But until he gets on the field, what are we talking about?
True. 100% true. Also from the mailbag, from Kirk, what is the more powerful motivator, the cheers from your home crowd or causing your opponent's home crowd to boo? Where do you stand on that one, Steve, since you've lived it?
The cheers from your home crowd are better. They seem to steamroll easier. The home crowd,
it's like a wave of emotion.
The home crowd is always great because it's in your, it's up for you, and it's, you know, obviously now getting your home crowd to boo, the opponent's crowd to boo, yeah, that's nice because it also takes a good play by you to do that, but the home crowd kind of you seem like you gain momentum when you do that more so than when you go to the away crowd and you silence them or they boo. When they boo, it's more like they, a lot of times they boo their own club. It's not, you know what I mean? You know, they boo because they're angry.
Well, yeah,
about
but
it.
There's a chance you could have had an impact on that.
Right. I mean, sure. But when they boo, it seems there are more reasons for the home crowd to cheer than there are for the opponent's crowd to boo. When they boo, that means because they're angry that something bad happened. Not when you score, they don't boo because you score. They just go silent. You know what I'm saying?
Which I think might even be more delicious.
Oh,
you
the
just
silence.
Shut up a crowd completely.
Oh, the silence is delicious. Yeah, no question. No question about it. But yeah, I'd say having, because it means you're at home and all that. So I'd say, yeah, I'd say more your home crowd cheering is better than the away crowd booing.
Yeah. We have one entry here on Christmas weekend for Tailgate Friday, which is presented by Highmark Blue Cross Blue Shield of Western New York, the official health plan of the Buffalo Bills. And it's from Dinah, who, as far as her tailgate is concerned, and we do know tailgates differ when you're on the road, but she's keeping it simple. Leftover Christmas cookies, eggnog, Christmas dinner leftovers, spiced hot apple cider. You go, Dinah. Liqueuring it up here on for game day.
Yeah, I'm totally with her. Are you a thumbs up eggnogger or a thumbs down eggnogger? I know it's polarizing topic.
I think hate is a strong word, but if I don't have eggnog on Christmas, I'm not left wanting it.
Yeah,
if that makes sense.
I'm a fan.
I could take it or leave it.
I'm a big fan. I like it. It's a little bit of a like a Christmas milkshake for me. I mean, it's
a Christmas milkshake.
It's a Christmas milkshake.
Yeah.
Plus, like I told you, we had Kyle Brandt on during the week. I throw liquor in it, and I'm off to the races.
Right. Yeah, you're a heavy pour on the eggnog alcohol.
Yeah, you start out about 50-50, and then it goes to where it's a tablespoon of eggnog on top of Bailey's or something, you know.
Yeah, it's like the foam on top of a fancy coffee.
Yeah, I'm a little by the time. And I got to be honest, I'm at a point in my life where I won't apologize for it either. So, you know,
you don't need to apologize to anybody. That's how you like your eggnog. That's how you drink your eggnog.
So you're not
I just don't know if, I just don't know if you could call it eggnog anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point by you. But
this has some Baileys with a splash of nog.
But you are tolerant of eggnog is, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, I'm not, I'll put it to you this way. Christmas, you know, around whether it's the hors d'oeuvre table or the dinner table, eggnog is not probably in the top five things I'm seeking out.
Well, I'll say this: if you want to put on a winter, you know, coat of 5 pounds of blubber, eggnog is the way to do it.
Oh, yeah. What's the first ingredient? Heavy cream?
Oh my!
I mean,
I don't know. It's
seriously,
like raw eggs and something. I don't know what it is, but it's like 1,000% calories.
Yeah,
and
you're only two steps removed from the viscosity of paste. drink an eggnog.
A step and a half, yeah. Probably. So, yeah. I mean, it's
yeah.
You don't eat it with a spoon. I mean, it's hard to get through a straw. You know.
No, you can't. You can't have that.
Which is why you know. Which is why you kind of you got to cut it with a little bit of alcohol. You know.
Yeah, thin it out a little bit.
Oh man, it's yeah. I'm a. It is my. It might be. Yeah, I think I like eggnog and Bailey's better than I like coffee and Bailey's.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm.
That is saying something.
I think it's. I'm way down that path.
I wonder if that's because you only get it for the span of arguably 4 or 5 days out of the year, maybe a week if it spins into New Year's celebration.
It may get
is it because
some, yeah.
You miss it all year, and then for a week you get it? It's almost like, oh, we finally got here. Let me load up on the eggnog, and then you forget about it for 11 and a half months.
If eggnog was a year-round thing, I'd weigh 35 at least pounds more than I am right now.
I don't doubt it a second.
It would be my go-to coffee creamer. It would be my everything. You know, I'd use it in everywhere I use.
Now there, see, now that is a surprise that nobody has come up with an eggnog coffee creamer yet. Does that exist? Maybe it does exist.
It probably does. Come on, man.
Probably exists.
In the Western world, that exists.
They put everything in coffee. Yeah.
Somebody's going to notify us and send us a label picture of it. Eggnog creamer.
That's right. But there will be a GIF dropped into the One Bills Live Twitter handle shortly. Right. All right, we got to take a break here because coming up next, the senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, will be joining us. We'll talk X's and O's with him on Patriots Bills. It's coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for me.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, welcome to hour number two. And on a Friday, you know what that means. It's time for senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, to join us as we dice up the X's and O's. For Bills Patriots, the biggest game of the year for the Bills for sure, as the division title is on the line. How the heck are you, Greg?
Well, I'm excited to talk about the biggest game in the history of Western civilization as we know it.
There you go. I'm glad you got it.
We appreciate the
I'm
hyperbole.
Glad you see things the way we do. Okay. There is a lot of question marks about this game, though, even though these two teams play each other twice every year. The first game this year, 40-mile-an-hour wins. The Patriots didn't have to throw it at all, threw it three times, completed two of them. The Bills have no idea what they think of the Patriots think about the Bills' secondary. Are the Bills going to be able to score points on a really tough defense to score points on? What do you think this game will look like in best case, your best guess?
Well, my guess is we know what the Bills' offense will look like. I don't think we know what the Patriots' offense will look like. The Bills' offense is essentially the same every week. If someone just looked at the box score and saw 22 carries for Singletary, they might think the Bills played differently. But as you guys know, they really didn't play that differently. I think half of those, if not more, came in the fourth quarter with a two-score lead. Up to that point, they had pretty much been their normal pass-heavy offense. And I quite honestly, and I'm just speaking to the tape, guys. You know that's what I do. I think it's taking a toll on Josh Allen. I think with the O-line having to be reshuffled a little bit and some concerns there, as we've discussed and documented all season, I think you're starting to see Josh be a little undisciplined, move unnecessarily. And last year, he did not really do that. He's more than capable of making great plays when he does that, but it also leads to a little random nature to his play. And I think he's going to have to play probably his best game of the season on Sunday. I don't know what the weather is supposed to be. Is that supposed to be an issue?
Doesn't look like it at this point, so we should be okay on that. 40 degrees, you know, not any significant wind of note, 10 miles
Well, there you
an
go.
Hour.
That's as they say, Chris, I guess that's football weather, right? So, you know, I think that we know what the Bills will look like. Even without Cole Beasley, the offense won't change dramatically. McKenzie will get snaps. I imagine Kumerow will get some snaps as well. I can't imagine that it'll be any different one thing we know about Bill Belichick is he does play man. They've played a little more zone recently, but he will match up J.C. Jackson on Stephon Diggs. I think we pretty much know that.
Right, yeah. The next-gen stats actually indicate that in the three meetings, the last three meetings between the Bills and the Patriots, they've had J.C. Jackson match up and shadow Stephon Diggs on 90% of the snaps. So that's pretty much following him around for all intents and purposes. Yeah.
What do you think the Bills offense will do with the absence of Cole Beasley? I mean, they're certainly not going to just run some other personnel combination. They run 11 too much, probably just to abandon it.
Yeah, that I mean, I guess the question is, we know they're going to throw it, okay? They're not all of a sudden going to become a run-first team. And by the way, despite what happened last week with the Patriots, they're a pretty good run defense. So, and that's not what the Bills do. So they are going to throw it. So the question you're really asking is, what's it going to look like? I can't imagine the overall scheming of it will look dramatically different. I mean, obviously, Cole Beasley is very, very good at finding voids in zone coverage. He's very good at those quick sort of pivot routes, whip routes, those kinds of routes against man. I think McKenzie's a little different kind of player. He's a more straight line, explosive athlete. You can certainly use McKenzie on jet sweeps. You don't really see Beasley used that way. Maybe that's an added feature to the offense this week. I think that you could see McKenzie just in general be used more in motion just to get a feel for how the Patriots might defend that. We've seen that before. So I think there'll be some added wrinkles with McKenzie because he's different than Beasley, but he's also not as good as Beasley in certain areas that Josh Allen is clearly comfortable with.
So with that in mind, how might the conversation change if Emmanuel Sanders is back from his knee injury? Stephon Diggs was just addressing the Buffalo media after practice today and gave indication that Sanders will be back in the lineup. He does have experience in the slot. How might he, would he be a better option in the scope of this offense than, say, McKenzie, who's been used more on the fringes, you know, with a lot of that jet sweep motion that you're talking about?
Yeah, well, that's the question, because Sanders in his career has lined up both outside and in the slot, and he's very comfortable in each spot. So, you know, that could be a big factor. They're going to have to make plays in the passing game to win this game. There's no question. They're not going to win this game running the football. So we know they're going to have to make plays in the passing game, and to do that, it starts with protection. So that is the key thing. You know, I think that's one of the reasons this year, quite honestly, guys, that we've seen so many quick game throws and not a lot of vertical throws. Last year, we saw a lot more vertical throws down the field. We've not seen anywhere near that this year. I mean, I thought last year the route concepts they had vertically were really good. We haven't seen many of those this year. My guess is it's the protection issue.
Right, and that it goes to hand in hand with the fact their offensive line, we talk about it all the time here, their offensive line has been shuffled a ton with injuries, with COVID, with absences, with shifting around. Darrell Williams has played right tackle and right guard. Mitch Morse has been the only stalwart, the guy that's actually been planted in there and not moved. Deion Dawkins is now out, and that was before getting a late start with COVID way back in training camp, and now he's out with the same thing, COVID again.
Is he definitely out this Sunday?
Huh? We don't know yet. He's got a shot at it, but he hasn't been. He can't even get in the building, let alone come in and play left tackle against the Patriots. That'll be a big ask, you know. So you got Feliciano with his calf injury, then COVID. Spencer Brown was out with COVID and a back injury. So the offensive line has been a complete mess for 8 weeks, and it showed last week early, even in the Carolina game.
Without question.
What did you see?
And again, I agree with you. And I think, look, Spencer Brown moved to left tackle. That's the position I believe he played in college. But he struggled at times with Brian Burns. You know, he's probably not quite ready to be an NFL left tackle on a weekly basis, but there's no choice right now. He's certainly athletic enough. He has to get stronger. You know, that'll probably happen with another year, another offseason. Because he's really built like a basketball player. He's kind of long. He's sinewy. He's athletic. He just needs to get stronger. So, that's to me. And again, I can't speak to what's in Josh Allen's head. But, you know, Steve, that quarterbacks, when they're under pressure a lot, two things start to happen. They start to anticipate that they'll be under pressure. and they start to perceive pressure that's not really pressure. And when those two things happen, quarterbacks move unnecessarily, and they break down and disrupt the timing of the play.
Right. So, and if they get that straightened out, you still have the question of, are they going to be able to run block? Are they going to be able to pass block? Can they win the yep. line of scrimmage? And plus, how versatile can they be and how much confidence Daboll has in them to run the full complement of plays? Plus, they're going to go against a defense yes. with the Patriots that's really, really executes well.
Yeah, and that's – you made a great point, because if you're not going to get big plays, you know, it's one thing if your offense can have some hiccups through a game if right. you hit some big plays, as you know, because that's the deodorant. If you can hit some big plays, you're good. But this is a difficult defense to go 12, 13 plays down the field, and if that's going to be their approach, you know, if they stay with the approach of the quick game throws, the six-yard throws – the hitches to digs, the, you know, those kinds of throws, that takes a long time. It's tough to score that way. It's tough to score a lot of points that way. So we'll see what their approach is, but we all know that they're going to throw the football. You know, the question is, can you really ask Josh Allen against that defense to drop back 45 times?
Right. Let's flip it around to the Patriots offense. And one thing that I've noticed, Greg, is their third down conversion rate has dropped off precipitously the last 4 weeks.
Yeah.
It's trending about 10% below their season average. Over the last 4 weeks, it's like 32.5% conversion rate. Obviously, getting into some more long down and distance situations has been one of the main culprits because of that. I'm just curious what you've seen from this Patriots offense, probably over their last 4 games, that seems to have them a little hamstrung on third down, and obviously the Bills game is included in that, where weather was a factor in compromised play calling.
Sure. You know, I think that the point you made, and I haven't studied all the third and what the distance situations are, but as you said, they've been in longer yardage situations, and that puts more of a burden on Mac Jones, because Mac Jones, you know, he's played very efficiently. You know, I think because it's New England and they won 7 in a row, people have the sense that, man, this guy's in the MVP conversation, which is a little ridiculous, but he still played very well for a rookie quarterback. But he's played well a certain way, Chris, and you really kind of nailed it kind of implicitly in what you said. He's been able to get rid of the ball really quickly. There's a lot of quick game throws. There's a lot of defined reads and throws where the ball can come out. That changes when you get into third and long, as you guys know. It's a little different when it's third and long. You can't just drop back, hit your back foot, and throw it 6 yards if it's third and nine. You know, so I think that that's where you start to run in a little bit of an issue. And if you're a Patriots fan, that ideally is the next step and stage in Mac Jones' development, which is what they'll work with him on in the offseason. But right now, you know, he's not really ready to be the kind of guy that if you're in meaningful third and eights, third and nines, those kinds of plays, he's not quite there yet to really do that. So that becomes where the Bills have to get this offense. They've got to get them into long yardage situations. And obviously the last game, even with only 3 passes thrown, there was just too much domination running the football that they couldn't get them into long yardage anyway.
What did we learn about Mac Jones and the New England offense when we saw them trying to catch up last weekend in Indianapolis?
Well, I will say this. I thought he actually played pretty well when he tried to catch up. You know, the one thing is when you get ahead like that, what a lot of defenses do is they play more zone. And that's exactly what Indianapolis did. Now, Indianapolis has played a lot of man coverage this year, but they played a lot of zone. And the one thing that Josh McDaniels is really, really good at is schemed throws. Because if you know you're getting zone, then you know the route concepts that can beat zone. They're schemed throws. And those throws Mac Jones executes well because he knows where the voids are and it's schemed. So I actually thought he played well down the stretch. The interception by Leonard in the red zone was one that kind of really surprised me by Mac Jones, because – it ended up just being cover three, and only he could tell you this, but I don't know where he thought Darius Leonard was going to be, because he was just the hook defender in cover three, and he threw it right to him. I mean, and then you could see him as soon as he threw it, as we're looking at the play, you know, he did not account for Darius Leonard at all, but he was the hook defender in cover three, and he basically threw it right to him.
And then, Greg, there is a little bit of a play-action battle in this one. Mac Jones has been extraordinarily efficient in play-action, has one of the highest completion percentages off play-action passes. But the Bills' defense is number one in the league in opponent passer rating, defending play-action. And I think I should throw this in. Josh Allen leads the league in play-action pass touchdowns with 14 this season.
Yep.
So how does that battle shake out, I guess, primarily with Mac Jones in the play-action game and the Bills being so good at defending it, not being fooled by it, I guess?
Well, their play-action game is a little different because a lot of it comes out of base personnel. And that's – so it'll be interesting. We know that the Bills went right back to playing 100% nickel this week after playing 28 snaps against the Patriots with a third linebacker on the field. So I guess what I'm fascinated by, Chris, and I guess we won't know the answer to this until Sunday when the game is played, is if the Patriots do line up, and again, they're going to throw it more than three times, but if they do line up with the fullback, which they do, if they do line up with six offensive linemen, which they do, what are the Bills going to do from a personnel standpoint? Are they going to stay 100% nickel, or are they going to put a third linebacker on the field? You know, that's, to me, that is one of the big personnel questions of this game.
One of the things the Patriots do so well is their pass defense, their secondary allows only like 185 yards a game through the air.
Yep.
Why are they so effective as a defense? Because, I know Judon is having a fantastic year and is extremely good at pass rusher, but why is their defense so good against not giving up points plus being really difficult to throw at?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. Look, they had been a high percentage man coverage defense. The last number of years, they've always been among the highest percentage playing cover one, which is man coverage with a single high safety, as you know. This year, when they lost Jonathan Jones, they sort of morphed a bit. He was their slot corner. They morphed a bit into playing a little more zone coverage, but they're still pretty much a man-based defense. They play it really well. They've been able to speed up quarterbacks quite a bit. I think my guess is, and I'm not there, but my guess is they teach technique really well to DBs. I would guess that's true. And they're just not a team that gives up a lot of big plays. I mean, that's been the MO for Belichick. Belichick is not about what you do between the 20s. He's about how he matches up to you in critical situations. And all of a sudden there's a double, Steve. All of a sudden there's a bracket coverage. All of a sudden there's a cover zero blitz. You know, he's a situational guy. So, you know, he doesn't care about being number one in defense in terms of yards allowed. He cares about points. And they don't give up a lot of points.
Right.
Last one I've got for you, Greg. Dane Jackson's been in the lineup for about four games now. Just curious what your thoughts are in watching him on film. Granted, there probably wasn't much to pull off the tape in the first New England game after three pass attempts by the Patriots. But maybe, you know, how did he fare, do you think, against Tampa and then Carolina here and some of his early action in the starting lineup in place of Tre'Davious White?
You know, I guess the way I'd answer that, because I don't want to make something up because I haven't studied him as a pure individual, but I haven't noticed him, which is a good sign. So, you know, because very often when I'm watching games, if I see a corner that someone's going after, then I really notice them. So obviously he's not Tre'Davious White, but up to this point, I don't think he's been a liability. I mean, when they play the Bucs, obviously Brady is going to, you know, get it out there. I think he had the play we're looking at now. I can't remember. I know he had an interference call on one play against the Bucs. That was a big one. But, I haven't noticed him in a negative way. I haven't felt like, wow, they're really going after him and they're killing him, which I feel sometimes when I watch certain corners. So, this might, who knows, maybe this is a week. I tell you one thing, and you guys both know this, it will not be the exact same game plan with Bill Belichick that it was 2 weeks ago. That will not be the case. Now, they'll run the ball because that's what they do to a large extent, but it will not be the same.
Yeah, I agree with you, Greg. Thanks a lot, Greg. Appreciate you.
Yeah, enjoy your holiday weekend.
Happy holidays.
We'll catch up with you next
week.
You
too, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right, that's Greg Cosell joining us here on One Bills Live. And we will take a break. Be back with more in just a second. One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. All right, welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker here with you on this Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas, everybody out there. We heard from Sean McDermott earlier in the show as he addressed the latest COVID reserve designations on the roster, those being Gabriel Davis and Cody Ford, who presumably will not be available for Sunday's game. But how do the rest of the players on the roster feel about it? Dawson Knox addressed the media after practice today and addressed some of those very thoughts. So here now is Dawson Knox.
I mean, what did you ask Santa for this Christmas?
You know, I would love a little like surround sound system deal. I got a little basement home theater thing I'm trying to get going. Trying to get like a projector, you know, the full movie theater experience. So I need a good little surround sound system, you know, so I can just blast it down there.
The Dawson's Cave, man. Hey,
that's no right. Doubt. That's right. No question. Yeah, it's gonna be good.
Merry Christmas and good luck this Sunday, guy.
Merry Christmas. Appreciate it.
Hey, Dawson. I know a lot can change between now and Sunday as far as who's able to play. But right now, with the team just being so thin, both on the O-line and at receiver, how does that impact you and the tight ends of, you know, you guys are kind of affected on both sides of that?
Yeah. Obviously, all that stuff's out of our hands. Nobody can really control that. But it just becomes more critical for our preparation. Like, we're going to have to do our job to the T. Like, we're going to have to prepare just as hard as we prepared every other week. And just know that we might get some extra snaps at the tight end position just because there's not as much depth at other positions. But in terms of the way it's changed my preparation, I don't think it's changed what I do on a daily basis at all. You know, I'm excited to be able to step up. And I, you know, my whole goal as a tight end is to never come off the field. I want to be on the field for every play, every snap. I think there's going to be a lot of guys that have to step up as well, especially in the receiver room and O-line room.
Thanks. Merry Christmas.
Hey, Dawson. You mentioned that offensive line room. I mean, when you guys get out there on Sunday, there could be, you know, three guys out there that, you know, are being asked to step up. Can you talk about who maybe has stepped up in that room while you guys have been going through all this stuff? Obviously, Mitch Morse is a guy that, you know, probably pops. But is it nice to have a guy like that in there, that, you know, a veteran presence?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a leader of the O-line. He gets everyone organized. He makes the calls at the line of scrimmage. So, he's the guy that everyone follows his lead. But it's hard to think of the O-line without thinking about every single position and every single player that stepped up and had to change positions. I mean, you know, Spencer's gone from side to side, right tackle to left tackle. Ike and Cody and, you know, John, the guards have bounced around all year. There's been a lot of guys that have had to step up and play new positions that they might not be comfortable with. And it's just a testament to them and their preparation, just being able to step up and do whatever is asked of them. But I think Mitch has been a very consistent, very, very important leader. And everything that he brings to the line is very important to the whole offense.
And then I saw your one-on-one against Ryan Bates the other day. We're out there, kind of turned to the media and said, he's really good. There's actually like a part of the fan base that is like, they call him the Bates Hive, huge Ryan Bates fans. And obviously you don't know what happened on Sunday, but that's a guy that I feel like nobody really knows much about, but he seems to be, you know, a nice glue guy in the room.
Oh, he's awesome. We call him Rick. I don't know why that just kind of became his nickname, because he looks like a Rick. you know, you just see his face, and we just did some Christmas superlatives, and he was the most likely to ask for a set of tools for Christmas. You know, he's just like your classic dad guy. Like, he's always at home. Just, he's a homebody. He's an awesome dude, though. Great sense of humor. And he's another guy that's been able to step up, whether it's been like a jumbo tight end position or anywhere else on the line. He always brings some good energy to practice and gets everyone smiling.
What was your superlative?
What was my superlative? I did Tommy's. Tommy was most likely to request the rock version song of every Christmas song that's played. God, what was mine? dang it. Zach, you remember one? Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't remember mine, but the video will come out soon, and everybody will see it at some point. Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Dawson. Merry Christmas.
Yeah, for sure, Matt. Merry Christmas.
Hey, Dawson. A couple questions for you. First, I guess with, and Sean kind of talked about this with us earlier, like it seems like every day someone's going on the COVID list, and it's not just a Bills thing. It's kind of a league-wide, past that, you know, worldwide thing. For you guys, what's it kind of just like, because we can't be in there, what's it like, you know, in the facility this week? What is the kind of the mindset and mood kind of been?
Yeah, so we've taken all the extra precautionary steps to avoid the spread, to avoid getting infected. But it's just one of those things. It's a virus. Nobody can control how it spreads or who it spreads to. You know, this year, I think 95% of the NFL is vaccinated or something like that. And there's been, I think, just as many, if not more, cases this year. So that just goes to show that, you know, the virus is going to spread no matter vaccination status, no matter if you're masking or not. So it's something that you just got to take every precaution that the CDC comes out with, you know, stand 6 feet apart, trying to avoid gatherings as much as you can. But it just kind of amplifies the next man up mentality. You know, any given normal year, you know, there's injuries, there's people that get hurt every minute, you know, like someone might have a broken helmet. So the next guy has to come in, but this kind of just takes that to the further, to the next step, because you never know, you know, it could be the morning of the game, somebody could pop positive. So just, again, it's a testament to everyone's preparation here, because you could be on practice squad, you could be not expecting to even be active for the game, and next thing you know, you're active and starting. So the preparation's key, just for everyone to be locked into their assignment. I think everyone that is called on to step up and get some playing time is going to get their job done and do well.
Hey, Dawson, I wanted to follow up on something you were saying to Matt about how there's been so many guys on the O-line kind of moving around. Darrell Williams is one who I don't think he's gone more than three games without having to switch just back and forth all season. What have you seen out of him and his handling of that?
Yeah, I mean, he's probably been the most important part of the foundation of the O-line, and just in terms of knowing every position and doing exactly what he's asked. I mean, he's gone from guard to tackle almost every other week, it seems like, without skipping a beat. He's obviously a very experienced player, and he's gotten the job done no matter where he lines up at. Like, I couldn't imagine doing something like that, just switching in the middle of a week and going to play in an NFL game at a high level like he does week in and week out. So a lot of credit is due to him that I think he doesn't get as much. But when you look at how hard it is to play offensive line, and then especially how hard it is to change positions like that, his name should be at the top of the list in terms of just being able to be so, just his versatility and leadership as well that comes with that.
You mentioned not just like having to switch, but that it feels seamless. What does he do to make it, like, is it preparation? Is it his play? How does he make it less noticeable?
Yeah, just his preparation. Like in practice, you know, if coach asks him to move, it's not like, I mean, he just doesn't even blink. He just is like, all right, I'll switch, and then gets the job done. You never hear him complaining. He never, even in the locker room, he's never like, oh, I wish they wouldn't switch me around. Like, he just takes it for what it is, and he's the ultimate team player. I mean, you wish you had 100 guys like that. But it's very impressive to see what he does and how he does it so well, even though he's changing positions every week.
All right, that's Dawson Knox addressing the media after practice today, giving some pretty thoughtful answers about some of the frequent shuffling we had to see on the O-line due to some COVID reserve designations as well as injury, and some of the adjustments he and the other tight ends are going to have to make this week, knowing both the O-line and the receiving core are shorthanded. And you have to believe that, I mean, Knox is a pretty important part of the game plan every week, Steve, but in the absence of Gabriel Davis and Cole Beasley, you got to believe if he's not 1A, he's 1B. I mean, yeah. Diggs is one, but he might be 1A or 1B.
I think you got to anticipate him getting more targets. interestingly enough, you'd think he might get more targets by sending him, you know, throwing the football whenever he's out there. He might be higher on the priority list for Josh Allen to look at as well. But then again, as well, he may not, because he may be forced to stay in and help a depleted offensive line protect. There's that as well. But yeah, I think what it does do is it puts him, I think, in Cole Beasley's priority spot for how many targets he's going to get. I think whatever targets Knox would have gotten and Cole Beasley would have gotten, his targets are going to be somewhere within the combination of those two, depending on what happens with Manuel Sanders and Isaiah McKenzie and all the other things. I really have a hard time. I said it earlier in the show, Brownie. I think this game's going to come down to the others. It's not going to be Steph Diggs. It might not be Dawson Knox. It might be, but I think it's going to be more about Emmanuel Sanders and Isaiah McKenzie and the running backs in the passing game, more so than the top two pass catchers like Knox and Diggs.
When you are shorthanded to the degree that the Bills are on the offensive side of the ball, do you think it prompts the defense to play more aggressively, to maybe make a few more things happen, perhaps try to get a couple of more possessions for that offense, which may not be firing on all cylinders?
You're talking about the Bills defense?
Yes.
Right? Yeah, sure, but I think this defense is coming into this game, if they're not highly motivated from the way they played the last time these two teams got together, if they're not really ready to play a much more physical brand of football at the line of scrimmage in that front seven and do something that forces the Patriots to do something they don't want to do, I think that's first and foremost on their plate. I think certainly they would love to get some turnovers. They'd love to force some fumbles, get a tipped interception. But I think they're more focused on getting New England off the field somehow, some way, than just having them be pushed all over the field like they were in 40-mile-an-hour winds here in Orchard Park. I think certainly the turnovers come into play, but man, oh man, they've got a couple of things that they're probably looking at much more on a much more important level, given the way the last game went.
Yeah. The defense is so good in its own right. You'd want to say if they just play a little bit more consistent, not that they played a bad game in the windstorm. You let a big run leak out. But other than that, relatively sound defensively, you'd like to say, all right, let them just play their game. We'll figure out how to fill the holes on offense. And if special teams can help us, great, all the better.
14 points is not that many.
Leslie Frazier. Yeah, it just makes me wonder a little bit. Does Leslie Frazier say, let me help those guys a little bit, especially if the game starts going a certain way where maybe the offense is struggling. Maybe you take a chance. Maybe you get aggressive, try to make something happen to benefit your offense, whether it's an extra possession or who knows, get a defensive score of some kind, by crafting some kind of blitz at the right time to force a hurried throw, get a turnover. Maybe be a little bit more aggressive than they typically are.
Yeah, I get the thought there that you feel like maybe you got to do something special defensively to give your offense a boost, maybe a short, even a short field,
Right.
I get it. And the defense, and for all that happened and, the way they played, and, they only forced three passes the entire game the last time. 14 points is not enough to win most football games. And if it wasn't 40-mile-an-hour winds in Orchard Park, you'd think the Bills would have scored more than that. But then again, so would the Patriots. The Bills' defense certainly should play with some confidence, and certainly should play with a sharper attitude. And I get the fact that when you're depleted on the offensive side, your defense is sitting there going, "Hey, we got to take up some slack here." Maybe there is that mentality going in. But I think the Patriots bring too much to the table to think like you're just going to wish it and make it happen or do something special outside the parameters. I think if you had a defense that you thought you might be able to get in on the quarterback fast, or that's all in there every week. But I do think it all comes down to timing it just right and getting and making it happen. But I think that that message is probably in the locker room, both amongst the players and maybe the coaches have relayed it to them as well, that, hey, guys, our side of the ball's really got to pick it up this week because our offense is depleted because of the offensive line and Gabe Davis and all of that.
And then there's the fine line that Josh Allen has to walk. I think most people would agree, and you mentioned it at the top of the show, he has to come up with a superhuman performance, potentially, to lift this team to victory on Sunday. But he also has to do it in such a way where he's not making ill-advised decisions in an effort to try, you know what I mean, try too hard to make something happen. If you don't let it organically unfold, that's when he has gotten into trouble in the past. And it's going to be a tightrope for him to walk this week, because you know he's going to be thinking, I got to do a few more things with all the guys we have out, and that can be a dangerous path to go down, even though in a lot of cases it helps this team.
Yeah, he's certainly going to have his percentage of plays that he's got to make. I don't want to, and I said earlier, he's going to have to put the cape on, you know, to make this happen. And you're right. It comes down to, can he do that while not making any mistakes? That's what we're talking about. I don't care if he goes out and runs the ball every time or has 20 carries in the game called quarterback runs, as long as he doesn't fumble it any and he doesn't throw any interceptions on the other 35 snaps that they take. And he's, you know, he's got to complete 70% of his passes. And they got to go, like, they got to go 4 of 5 or 5 of 6 or in the red zone. You can't get around it. I mean, you know, I've watched this team so much. The more you think about how this game's going to look, the more you just got to hang it on Josh Allen and think, well, what's he going to do? Who's going to help him?
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing. Who's going to help him? And can he find him and protect the football enough to make it happen?
Break time for us here. Steve and I close it up next on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Chris Brown, Steve Tasker with you. Almost done for the day. And, Steve, the list continues to grow around the National Football League. The Colts will be without their best offensive lineman tomorrow when they play at Arizona, a pivotal game for them. They have placed guard Quentin Nelson on the reserve COVID list. That is a tough loss for them. It's not as tricky as Baltimore's situation. You want to talk about a team that's dealt with a lot. The Baltimore Ravens may be at the top of the list, only eclipsed by these recent teams that had lengthy COVID reserve lists. Lamar Jackson officially listed as questionable for Sunday. As we know, he missed last week's game with his bone bruise on his ankle. He is questionable. He did not practice at all this week. His backup, Tyler Huntley, also questionable against the Bengals because of an illness. I don't even know who their third quarterback is.
I think Tyler Huntley is going to be okay because he was just sick yesterday at practice. That to me is going to be okay. It's a non-COVID illness. It'll be interesting to see. But all these games, I mean, every team in the league is going to be affected by it, and both positively and negatively. The Bills obviously got the bad news today about Gabe Davis and Cody Ford, and there's going to be others coming down the pike. Tomorrow is no exception. There's going to be guys tomorrow, so you got to stay tuned. I mean, on Saturday and Sunday, so stay tuned for that.
Yep. Merry Christmas, everybody. Check out the Bills by the Numbers podcast out there. Have a great holiday. We'll catch you on Monday.